There ain't no grace can hold my body down. There ain't no grace can hold my body down. When I hear that trumpet sound, I'm gonna rise right out of the ground. Ain't no grace can hold my body down. Well, look way down the river, and what do you think I see? I see a band of angels, and they're coming after me. Ain't no grave can hold my body down. There ain't no grave can hold my body down. Well, look down yonder, Gabriel. Put your feet on the land and sea. But Gabriel, don't you blow your trumpet till you hear from me. There ain't no grave can hold my body down. Ain't no grave can hold my body down. Jesus, me.
What's up, everybody? Oh, you didn't know? Returns live to the air right here tonight on the Pro Wrestling Powerhouse Radio Network. This is not John Demaselli. No, it's not Seth Guttenplan. This is Jersey Strong J. John is stuck in traffic right now or something along those lines, and he's supposed to host tonight. But because I'm on my A game, I'm always on the ball. I never miss a beat. I am here live, Pro Wrestling Powerhouse Radio, oh, you didn't know, on the air. Tonight, we are going to be talking about the epic career of the one, the only, the American Badass, the Dead Man, the Undertaker. And there's so much to talk about. We'll be discussing some topics that don't usually get talked about too often, such as what if the streak never truly happened? What if, and this is a big if, somebody defeated The Undertaker around WrestleMania 11, 12, 13, somewhere in that area, and the streak never happened? We'll talk about that. It almost happened. There was almost a big defeat at the hands of one of the other biggest wrestlers of all time, and when John comes on, he will break that down for you. We'll also talk about who could possibly face The Undertaker at WrestleMania 30. That's an intriguing subject, ladies and gentlemen. Nobody really knows which direction they're going to go in. He's pretty much fought everybody on that grand stage except John Cena. You can't see me. I'd love to see that. I don't know if you guys. If you want to call in, I'm hosting the show right now by myself. Please give me a buzz, 70-885-7749. Now, you know, where to begin with The Undertaker? You take it all the way back to Survivor Series 1990. And he was a mystery partner for the team headed by Ted DiBiase, the Million Dollar Man. And when I first laid eyes on this guy, I mean, I'm 28 in 1990. I was like, what? I think I was 5 at the time. I turned 6 in December, so I got 5. And, man, he was scary. One of those deals where you just don't know what you're looking at when he came out there. And I was terrified. You know, that's naturally how it is, terrifying. And he's done that throughout his career. One of the big wins of the entire career of The Undertaker that holds true to this day was the very next year, Survivor Series 1981, where he defeated Hulk Hogan. And that's something that not many people in WWE did at the time. It was shady. Yeah, Ric Flair got involved. We were supposed to have this great build-up to Hogan Flair at WrestleMania the next year. Obviously, that never happened. But we did see The Undertaker capture the World Wrestling Federation Championship from Hulk Hogan. Now, at the time, Hogan, you know, Hulkamania was kind of running its course a little bit. I was still diehard. I still love Hulk Hogan. Everybody who knows me knows I'm a big Hulk Hogan fan. However, the fact remains, Undertaker was young, he was big, and unlike any big guy we've seen to that moment. And when he defeated Hogan, man, it was a change guard. Obviously, we all know it. This Tuesday in Texas, which was one of the shows WWE does. They use a lot. They don't really do them anymore. Super show on pay-per-view, one-night-only type deal. And The Undertaker Hogan had a rematch, and Hulk Hogan won the belt back. Jack Tunney ended up putting the belt. Any fan now will know, putting the belt vacant, in abeyance, however you want to call it. And the New World Wrestling Federation champ crowned next year at the Royal Rumble. But The Undertaker, in his first year as a WWE superstar, became World Wrestling Federation by beating the greatest champion in the competition. Not only do the WWE.com fans think that, because Hulk Hogan was voted that way at the champions, but I think it as well. The greatest WWE champion of all time, Hulk Hogan, was defeated by The Undertaker. To me, it doesn't get any bigger than that. So once again, ladies and gentlemen, here holding the show on right now, if you'd like to give me a buzz to call in, please feel free. The number is 760-888-5749. I need your help, folks. The Undertaker's career, we're talking about, discuss anything you want to discuss about the dead man. And if you're from Pro Wrestling Powerhouse Radio, you know that anything goes here. So, The Undertaker loses the belt, the championship, the title. Suddenly, paths cross between The Undertaker and Jake the Snake Roberts, who just recently turned heel at the SummerSlam 1991 pay-per-view, match made in heaven, match made in hell type deal. He turned heel on Randy Savage. He terrorized the Macho Man to the point where Savage, you know, he was retired at the time. He had lost the career-ending match to the Ultimate Warrior. He was retired. But Jake the Snake terrorized him, and he was, you know, treading the dark side line. And it was perfect that he got involved with The Undertaker. He was somewhat of The Undertaker's mentor on TV. And they started a little rivalry with the Ultimate Warrior that we all know. Some sick shit came out of that. I don't know if you guys saw it, but if you haven't, please go back and check it out, man. There was a skit involved where The Undertaker actually trapped the Ultimate Warrior into a coffin. Fucking crazy. Like, that stuff just didn't happen that many times. You had the camera inside the coffin, Ultimate Warrior's trying to get out. The Undertaker was such an enigma from the very beginning that you just never knew what to expect. So Jake the Snake did stuff to the Ultimate Warrior, like lock him inside a fucking man, I'm trying to remember exactly what it was. I guess it was just like a crypt, like this room with a million snakes, man. And Ultimate Warrior didn't know what was going on. The Undertaker was kicking the crap out of him. You knew this was supposed to lead to a big epic feud between Ultimate Warrior and Undertaker. Sadly, or maybe not so sadly, they had a couple matches. Never really panned out. Once again, the Ultimate Warrior was being a fucking asshole and decided to leave WWE at some point in time. Money was always an issue with him. So that kind of left The Undertaker without anywhere to go. You know, nobody really knew what was going to happen at the time. And once again, I'm doing this all by memory, folks. I was only going to call in and discuss this. I wasn't expecting the host. But The Undertaker was kind of caught in limbo a little bit. And what happened? They turned him babyface. Now, this was tricky. It was tricky because he is a dark, dark, dark character. He's putting guys in body bags. He's carrying around an urn. Nobody knew what to think of Paul Bearer. It was a risk. It was a risk. There's no question about it that this gimmick, being one of the all-time riskiest gimmicks ever, it could have gone one way or it could have gone the exact opposite way. It could have been one of those things like the Repo Man or like freaking Mantar or something that just fizzled out. Bottom line is Mark Calaway was too damn good to let that happen. So we move on to WrestleMania 8. And if you look at that card, a lot of people, including a couple friends of mine who I talked to on Twitter and whatnot, guys from Wrestle Reaction, WrestleMania 8 was underrated. It didn't have the main event everybody wanted with Hogan versus Flair, but we definitely got a better match with Flair versus Savage for the WWF Championship. But the streak began at WrestleMania 7 when The Undertaker defeated Jimmy Snuka in a match that was kind of like, you know, it was basic. I've seen it before time and time again. And Jimmy Snuka, all-time great, don't get me wrong, he got The Undertaker over with that big defeat. So Undertaker wins that match, rolls into WrestleMania 8, just turns babyface. Nobody knew what to expect, but get this. He was over like Grover, man. The crowd went crazy for The Undertaker. He defeats Jake the Snake Roberts by hitting with a tombstone on the floor. Beats Jake the Snake. He's now 2-0 at WrestleMania. And at this point, Vince McMahon, the genius that he is, sees that The Undertaker is over. That things are happening. That this guy, with Hulkamania fizzling out, kind of moving to the wayside, this guy could be a future star for the company. And of course, what does McMahon do? He goes out and gets the biggest, ugliest, nastiest son of a bitch possible. Yes, he went to WCW and got the Giant Gonzalez, who, as we knew him back then, was El Gigante or whatever the hell you want to say. And don't get me wrong, I liked El Gigante. I thought he was cool, man, in WCW. I watched it at the time. He was pretty badass. But when he walks on to the WWF TV and he's in this freaking like bear suit or something, he's like a man that looked like he was carved out of stone, but he was wearing the suit of a man and he had fur on him and it was scary and Harvey Whippleman was his manager and it was a big fucking mess. But we're in 1990, I guess, two now, or 1993 or something along those lines. And you're thinking, what the fuck is this guy going to do? Like, how is anybody going to work with him? Of course, I'm sure a lot of fans wanted Hogan to come in and conquer the big giant and body slam him. But we got the next best thing, and that was The Undertaker. And Toph, man, thanks for calling in. You're on the line right now. What's going on, brother?
Oh, I'm doing fine. How are you doing today, Jay?
You know what, man? I'm doing all right. I was just on a podcast called it was a good time. It was the first time I've actually been a guest on a show in a very long time. So I'd like to thank, you know, Caleb, Kyle, and those guys over at Psycho Active Net. I was talking about Dexter and Breaking Bad and stuff, but I just for some reason had a feeling that John was not going to be here at 9 o'clock to host this show. I mean, he hit me up today. He was like, could you schedule this? And no knock on him. He's got a busy life right now. So I was just sitting here and I'm thinking, you know, I'm supposed to help out tonight as a guest again, but I noticed that the time was ticking down. And nobody was clicking over on the line. So I just freaking set up my Ethernet cable, plugged into Skype, and we're rolling talking about The Undertaker's career. Now, I'm not prepared. I am not fucking prepared for
what
this
are we? What are we discussing? Are we talking about his career or the streak or what?
Well, you know what? I didn't know what John had in mind, so I kind of started going through the timeline of The Undertaker character. Where he started, and I have no notes here. I'm just going by pure memory. I could be wrong with some things. I know I'm right about a few things, but I just got on the Giant Gonzalez and how they brought in Giant Gonzalez to be this big menacing threat to The Undertaker. And at that time, he turned babyface, and it was kind of a risky move. So, you know, I'm sure you've seen all that stuff, man. What were your thoughts about The Undertaker turning babyface at the time he did?
I think one thing that really kind of led to it. This is somewhat unrelated, but not really. It's something that wrestling doesn't really do anymore. But like back in the old days, a lot of times what was going on in wrestling was a reflection of what was popular in social media at the time, you know, kind of like the best example being the NWO, because that was right off the coattails of the whole gang mentality of East Side, West Side with Tupac and Biggie. And when Michael Jackson released Thriller, you know, he made zombies look likeable. You remember that song, Thriller?
Oh, hell yeah, man. I remember the video clear as day.
Yeah, and, you know, I think Undertaker, I'm not going to say it was completely based off that, but, yeah, it was definitely a risky move. You know, when you look at a guy's gimmick, he's a dead man. You know, you can't get rid of him. You know, that makes him bad. But when you really think about it, it kind of makes him good, too, because you have all these other villainous heels, and it's like, what do I have to do to put this guy down? So I think it worked out. I think Paul Bearer was a huge influence as well because he was such a likable character, even though he was kind of creepy.
Yeah, big time. That's why I didn't think, you know, looking back on it, and I was just a kid and you were a kid at the time, I was terrified of The Undertaker. I remember it. I remember clear as day, Survivor Series 1990, just not knowing what I was looking at. To see this guy, because I used to watch Superstars and all that, put his opponents into body bags was something we've never seen before. And then to turn him into a baby face, of course, being a kid, I got behind him. You know, you turn a guy face, Vince McMahon tells me he's a good guy, he's a fucking good guy. It's just the way it was back then. And I think a part of it was the time period. There were a lot of gimmicks in wrestling, but this is one that stood out because it was so, so, so different. And that's why it had so much longevity. The many character twists and turns that it's taken, if you really want to go back and do the entire character of The Undertaker storyline from start to finish, there will be just a million twists and turns, so much shit that doesn't make sense. But I guarantee you, if WWE wanted to make a book out of that, they'd probably sell big copies of it because it is just one of those stories that will never die. Any wrestling fan will remember it for the rest of their lives. So, but he went in there with Giant Gonzalez, and correct me if I'm wrong, I believe that entire angle started at SummerSlam 1993, maybe? Am I wrong about that? Or WrestleMania 9, right, in 1993?
That sounds about right. I'll look that up very quickly right now.
I'm pretty sure what happened was the Giant Gonzalez, because SummerSlam 1992 was obviously in Wembley Stadium, and I think the Undertaker was injured. I don't even think he participated in that at all. And I
Kamala, remember?
Oh yeah, okay, yep, you're right.
It was a very, very that was the second to last match, I believe.
Yes. Okay. Now I remember. He had that short run with Kamala, which is smart. It's just like you were saying, these evil villainous heels that are attempting to put down this guy that can't be put down.
Okay, but you're pretty much at the right. All right, so basically, Taker beat Kamala at SummerSlam, and they had a rematch at Survivor Series, beat him in a coffin match,
right.
And without revenge, and then Gonzalez debuted at the Royal Rumble 93, and then that led to their feud at WrestleMania.
Okay, that's right. So, if I remember correctly, Gonzalez came out and eliminated him from the Royal Rumble, right? And then stepped over the ropes, eliminated himself, I think. I'm not positive on that. Yeah, so when this guy debuted, man, I knew who he was. I remember it because I liked WCW at the time. It was another just fun wrestling show to watch. So I knew who El Gigante was. And watching him as a Giant Gonzalez, it was really weird. What were your thoughts on Giant Gonzalez and the way they worked him with The Undertaker?
I thought it was funny. The Vanny War. You know, like something off the Power Rangers show.
Yeah, man. It was. It was completely different. And, of course, they had the match at WrestleMania 9 that wasn't so memorable. A lot of people shit on it. But, again, Undertaker victorious. He defeats Giant Gonzalez. Then, I believe, SummerSlam. You roll into SummerSlam 1993 that year. And as we were talking to Lex Luger on the show, and I'm going to bring it back to Pro Wrestling Powerhouse Radio, we talked to Luger. And Luger was telling us about the fact that Vince McMahon never really had the plan to put the belt onto Lex. You know, Yokozuna was such a great champion. He was going to roll with it, and he was going to continue to carry that strap after SummerSlam 1993. And that's where Undertaker obviously fought Giant Gonzalez again, I believe. But Vince knew that there was money to be made with the Undertaker against Yokozuna. And we're rolling now into another big moment in Undertaker's career, and that's Royal Rumble 1994. Definitely a night that I'll never forget. I remember watching it live, man. Terrifying. This was the kind of what's the word I want to use? The theatrics that WWE could use and get away with using at the time. The Undertaker was destroyed by a million heels in a casket match with Yokozuna. Bam Bam Bigelow was out there.
Yeah,
you know, hey, Toph, do me a favor. Do me a quick solid, bro. Just, I'm going to hang up on you. Just call right back. For some reason, I don't know how I sound, but for some reason, you're breaking up a little bit.
Okay.
All right, cool, man. Just call right back, brother. But I remember clear as day, Royal Rumble 1994. We had this casket match. And The Undertaker, you know, Jeff Jarrett was out there, Adam Bomb, the head shrinkers, they were beating the piss out of him, and he kept coming back. He kept beating Yokozuna's ass, trying to put him in the casket. Got him in the casket a couple times, I believe. Just could never get the job done. Mr. Fuji stole the urn from Paul Bearer. It was just a great moment. Little did we know that Undertaker was actually injured, and he was about to take some more time off of TV. So what happened was they strapped Undertaker in this casket, they locked it up, pushed him down the aisle, and then we saw maybe the most theatrical thing that WWE has done up to that point. I mean, you're talking 1994, the company's only been in the mainstream for, 15 years at the time. So the Undertaker literally rises from the dead. This they have like an Undertaker silhouette, like rising into the air. They go inside the casket, and Undertaker's sleeping, and he wakes up, and he says, "We will soon witness the rebirth of the Undertaker." And baby, if he wasn't over the babyface at that point, he would never be. The terrifying look on all the heels' faces when this happened was shocking to me. I know, Toph, you know what I'm talking about. Thanks for calling back in. Royal Rumble 1994, that casket match, Undertaker, Yokozuna. Give us your thoughts on that contest.
Yeah, it was a – do I sound better?
You sound way better, bro. You sound – it was night and day before.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I remember that. It was pretty cool. I actually remember one of my earliest memories of the WWF. This may have been like 95 or 96. I'm not even sure if you remember. They used to have these little mini shows, like sometimes during the summer, and it was like the best of SummerSlam. And one year it was like an hour special dedicated to the coolest moments. And at the very end of it, it was this really cool montage of like Taker's coolest moments. And at the very end of it, it had his exact quote, the one you just said. And he said something else too. It's been so long. I think he said the spirit of the Undertaker lives on with all the souls of mankind,
yes. The
eternal flame of life, which will not be extinguished, and a bunch of other like deep philosophical quotes, and like the crowd was just eating it up. So yeah, when Taker did that, it was really cool.
Yeah, it was something we've never seen before. And we've seen theatrics since with Undertaker shooting fucking lightning and Kane with the fire and stuff like that, but this was something that we hadn't seen to the point. And we haven't seen really anything like it again. Even, the Undertaker's been set on fire, for crying out loud, and buried alive and all the stuff. But him rising from the dead like that was really cool. And he was gone for a while, folks. But something I remember very well was when he came back, and that was Undertaker versus Undertaker at SummerSlam 1994. We'll talk about this briefly. The best part of this whole feud was Leslie Nielsen trying to find the Undertaker. That was fucking fantastic. You want to talk about celebrity involvement in WWE, that was one of the best ones ever. Toph, what were your thoughts on that?
I really don't remember that well, to be honest, but I do know that a lot of fans debate about that, because I believe that was the same show where Bret and Owen had their cage match for the title, correct?
Yes, it was.
Yeah, I know a lot of fans argue that should have been the main event, but I believe the Taker versus Taker thing was the hottest story at the time, so it's just one of those times every now and then there's a feud that supersedes the title, and that was one of them. So,
yeah, the coolest thing about it was, if you go back and watch that match, as much of a stinker as it was, Brian Lee, primetime Brian Lee, not really sure if he's still alive, but he was the guy that played The Undertaker, and he did an amazing job. Like, he was pretty much dead on. He had everything from the mannerisms down. The only time you really knew that he was Undertaker is when you zoomed in on his face, and you can kind of see. But he had the makeup on and everything. He did a really good job. But, going back to the streak. At this point, you talk about WrestleMania 10, and that's a big WrestleMania in a lot of people's eyes. It was the night Bret Hart won the belt from Yokozuna. Huge show. Great show. Had a classic with Owen to kick it off. Macho Man and Crush in the Falls Count Anywhere match. All that kind of stuff. But Undertaker didn't compete on that. So
he was injured, right?
Yeah, he was hurt. They wrote him off at Royal Rumble, came back at SummerSlam. 1995 was kind of a fuzzy year for The Undertaker. This was the year where he had feuds.
Stuff that year.
Yeah, he had feuds with Curtis Hughes and Mabel, I think, and guys like that. Yeah, it was kind of an off year. But he rolled into
Brian Lee, he's alive. He's 46, and he's currently working at the Tennessee-based promotion, USWO. I believe that stands for the United States Wrestling Organization. Last update was in August 2012. He's doing just fine.
Okay, good. Yeah, see, you kind of lose track with these guys from the 90s and the 80s, as sad as it sounds. It is just the truth. But WrestleMania 11 rolls around, and at this point, you know, the streak still isn't a thing. Nobody really is paying attention. But you're going to WrestleMania 11, and you're thinking, who is he going to wrestle? He got involved in this feud with Ted DiBiase and Ted DiBiase's little corporation at the time, called it like Money Incorporation or the Million Dollar Corporation or something along those lines. And he brings in a blast from the past. He brings in King Kong Bundy, ladies and gentlemen. You could replay this match only on WWE 2K14, which you can purchase in the Pro Wrestling Powerhouse Amazon store. Give a little back to the show by purchasing your copy of WWE 2K14 from the Pro Wrestling Powerhouse Amazon store. We ask you to go to prowrestlingpowerhouse.com, click the link at the bottom of the page, and buy your copy of WWE 2K14 or anything else you want. Back to the match itself. Undertaker, King Kong Bundy, ugly, ugly match, but it just adds to his win streak. So he's definitely a WrestleMania legend. Toph, did you see that match?
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, a lot of his early matches weren't that good. A lot of people say that a lot of his early matches weren't that good. Probably like some of his best matches were the few matches he had with Diesel, the matches that he had with Brett, and that was really it. A lot of his early matches really weren't, they weren't bad, but they weren't good either. The thing that always confused me was I was always confused at why it took him so long to work with HBK, because they were on the roster for so long. I mean, they kind of were brought up around the same time, but they didn't really start working until like 97. So I always wanted to see Sean work with Taker like in 95, 96, but that never happened.
Yeah, you know what? Back then, you didn't see much of that. You kind of saw that big guy versus little guy thing a little bit with guys like Bret Hart and Diesel and stuff. But Sean hadn't really...
The closest they ever had, I remember, was he might have made, you know, from the game, but that was like the only time Taker and HBK were even remotely close to each other, and they didn't meet again until like 97.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, sorry about that. We've got a little bit of technical difficulties. Once again, I wasn't scheduled to host at this point in time, and I'm sorry about any kind of breaking up or technical difficulties. Toph, sorry about that. With the way it's hooked up tonight here at the house, I just, the internet, like if my girlfriend used the internet, I can't hear what the hell you're saying. So it's just that simple. So I'm sorry. I didn't hear a word of that, Toph. All right, we're going to go to just a quick little break here, and we'll come back, and we're going to talk more about the streak. And please make sure you head over to ProWrestlingPowerhouse.com, read something good, read something fun, and yeah, we'll be right back here on Oh You Didn't Know Radio on ProWrestlingPowerhouse.com and BlogTalkRadio.com, although I don't really like to give them all the credit in the world because, quite frankly, Blog Talk Radio isn't that good. We'll be right back. back here on Pro Wrestling Powerhouse Radio. Oh, you didn't know, talking about The Undertaker tonight. And thanks to anybody who's listening. And just so you know, I was not supposed to host the show. I was not ready. The way Blog Talk Radio works is it's run through like phone, basically. It's run through the phone line. And whenever, you know, I'm hooked up to a DSL and it's not the greatest internet connection in the world. So if I'm hooked up right into it and somebody else in the house is using the internet as well, then we get all kinds of feedback and everything because I am plugged directly into the modem. So that's the best way to hear it clearly. So what happened was my girlfriend was using Pinterest or something along those lines, and we kind of broke up a little bit. Once again, I'm sorry I was not supposed to host. I'm not ready for this. I don't know where John is, but he's killing me right now. So, Toph, sorry about that technical difficulties. I'm not sure what the listeners heard and what they didn't hear, but I know I couldn't hear a damn word you were saying, so I apologize for that.
Oh, it's okay. All I was really saying was the only time I ever remember HBK and Taker being together was there was a six-man tag on Raw. It was Taker, Diesel, and HBK against Yoko, Owen, and I'm just going to assume it was Bulldog. But, yeah, outside of that, Taker and HBK were pretty much never around each other. So,
and, you know, they went on to have one of the most legendary feuds in WrestleMania history. I mean, they headlined two WrestleManias back-to-back, WrestleMania 25, WrestleMania 26. And when you talk about the streak of The Undertaker, something that I know John was going to talk about, you look back at WrestleMania 12, and you see that The Undertaker is facing Diesel, known to everybody, Kevin Nash, his real name, but Undertaker versus Diesel. Now, John has stated, I don't know where he got his source on this, that if Kevin Nash were to re-sign with WWE and not head to WCW and take that big guaranteed check from WCW, that he would have, in fact, defeated The Undertaker, and there would really be no streak because they didn't really start acknowledging streak until later on in his career. So to me, if that's true, if that really happened, then, you know, that could have changed the course of history. Are you aware of this story, and what are your thoughts on it?
I listened to the Stone Cold Steve Austin podcast show, and he interviewed Kevin Nash a few weeks ago. And I believe it was in two parts. The first part was about the initial WWF run, and then the second part of the interview was about the WCW run and the NWO and the Wolfpack and all that stuff. And during the first part of the interview, Nash basically said that when he was originally getting his push, because back then, you know, before wrestling got as big, they said that when you were getting the push, you know, Vince was just calling you. He would call you and you would go to his house. And Nash said that he got a call from Vince and he went to Vince's house and Vince just said, so we're going to push you and we're going to give you the world title and you're going to be backing like how many ever seconds it was a really short match and whatever. And things were going good and WCW was offering him money. According to what Nash said, the turning point for Nash was he was not agreeing with the direction of the company. He was working a feud with Brett, if you remember. And they had a cage match, and basically Nash wanted the finish to go a certain way, but the creative didn't really like the way that Nash was going, and this kind of rubbed Nash the wrong way, and he just basically felt like he was gone, and he got his papers, and he was getting ready to walk to WCW, and according to what Nash said on the podcast, their plan was for him to go over Taker, but since Nash was going to go to WCW, Vince told him that if he was going to go to WCW, he needed to do three things. And two of those things was that he had to put Taker over and that he had to put Shawn Michaels over. And the third thing he wanted Nash to do was to put Ultimate Warrior over. However, Ultimate Warrior, for whatever reason, according to what Nash said in the podcast, did not want to work with Nash or Diesel. Because if you remember, Warrior came back at 12, right?
Yep.
Yeah, so he put over Taker at WrestleMania, and then he put over Shawn at that In Your House the very following month, and that was it. You know, so Warrior, Nash never happened. So that's pretty accurate. I think it's, I'm pretty sure Diesel would have beaten Taker had he not gone to WCW.
Now, you know, if Kevin Nash would have defeated Undertaker at WrestleMania 11, the streak would have never happened. Now, the streak has taken on a life of its own. It is the biggest each and every year at WrestleMania. And I'm going to probably wrap the show up pretty soon. I don't think John's calm. And one thing I wanted to discuss was who is going to try to defeat the streak next year at WrestleMania 30. And there's a lot of names out there, everyone from Ryback, John Cena. So my question to you, Toph, is who do you think The Undertaker will face at WrestleMania 30?
Depending on what happens with Sting, If it's not Sting, then unfortunately, it'll probably be Ryback, which would be dumb. Stupidly dumb.
Yeah, I don't understand the logic behind that, and I don't think it's going to go down that way. If anything, I think Brock Lesnar is a better choice than Ryback for sure. I think Taker would work
with Rock. I agree with you, but according to what sources are saying, Lesnar wants to work with Rock, and Rock wants to work with Lesnar.
Okay, all right. So if the sources are correct, that to me is fine. You know, Rock versus Rock makes sense. Huge match, two part-time guys. It would be a buy rate waiting to happen. Undertaker versus Brock makes sense because they did that thing at the UFC show. They kind of never really settled the score, you know. It was supposed to happen years ago, just didn't. It would make sense in every single way. However,
if Ryback doesn't work out, and again, like, we all make fun of Ryback, but, like, seriously, I mean, he would need thunder from God to even legitimately be, like, seen as a threat. So if Taker Ryback doesn't work out, you know, then the only other route they can take, and this is on the assumption that Sting doesn't jump, the only other route is the often discussed but feared Taker versus Cena. Just putting those two together just scares me to death. So, but hopefully don't go in that direction either.
Yeah, I personally don't mind seeing Taker versus Cena because it would be a gigantic spectacle. I'm really in the pomp and pageantry of WrestleMania, and that would be a match that would be huge in WrestleMania history. And a guy who Taker has never faced at WrestleMania, never defeated at WrestleMania. I don't think if that match did happen, I don't think John Cena's winning. That's for sure. I think Taker will go over and continue the streak. I don't think the streak will ever end. I think the streak ends when The Undertaker retires. It's just that simple. But a lot of people do think that it will end, but I'm pretty confident that it won't. We can talk all night about his feuds with Kane, Stone Cold Steve Austin, Triple H, everything that he's done in his career. There's no question about it. The Undertaker has been one of the greatest WWE superstars of all time and will go down in history as quite possibly the biggest attraction in professional wrestling. Because, and I'm talking attraction, I'm talking, it's something different than Stone Cold, who was the biggest superstar of that era, Hulk Hogan, who might be the biggest superstar ever. You talk about a guy who is just mainly an attraction. People are paying their money to see him once or twice a year. And regardless of what anybody thinks, any haters out there, people are still spending their money to see The Undertaker. So, Toph, I'm going to wrap this thing up so Amanda can get back on the computer. Final thoughts on The Undertaker's career and legacy in World Wrestling Entertainment?
For me, the streak will just be the icing on the tip of the iceberg or the icing on the cake. Very good career, and I'll remember him for much more than the streak. And the best of all time.
Yeah. Yeah, no question about it. I personally wrote an article, ProWrestlingPowerhouse.com, how I think there's no chance that The Undertaker will fight Ryback. I don't believe what the guys are saying, what the sheets are saying. I just don't believe them. 100% unequivocally don't believe it. I think it was made up. I don't think there's any legitimacy behind it. However, I do think that WrestleMania 30 will be a defining moment in his career, just much as WrestleMania 29 was. That's one match that stands out. His work with CM Punk was phenomenal. I was there live. The freaking arena was absolutely, not even the arena, the stadium was crazy when it came out. You could just feel the chill in the air. I know you've heard guys like Gorilla Monsoon and Jim Ross say that year after year, but man, it was true. Not only was it was cold that night, it was definitely cold, but when he came in, you got the chills when he came out. So the Undertaker, no doubt about it, one of the all-time greats. Toph, thanks so much for joining me tonight, man. This was, like I said, John didn't show up, so I took the reins. I might have gotten in a little trouble for it with a woman, but hey, shit happens. So thanks for joining me, man.
Oh, no problem.
All right, so that does it for Oh, You Didn't Know tonight. Sorry we couldn't have a longer, better discussion, but that's just the way it is. So for my man Toph, for John, who didn't show up tonight, this is Jersey Strong Jay signing off. Please make sure you check us out next Tuesday night. Pro Wrestling Powerhouse Radio will be live on the air. We'll update the fantasy draft. We'll talk about the results from Battleground Fucking Wrestling. Going to try to get a guest on the show. Don't have anybody planned at this point right now. But please visit ProWrestlingPowerhouse.com and make sure you follow me at PW Powerhouse on Twitter. Talk to me about whatever you want, whether it's wrestling, sports, entertainment. No matter what it is, I will talk to you about it. So thanks so much for joining us, and keep it real, everybody.
There ain't no grave can hold my body down. There ain't no grave can hold.